Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Rolling.
Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends. Wolverines.
There you go.
DJ says when we yell Freedom Fiends, it sounds like Wolverines.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with that.
I was thinking of maybe getting our artist friend to draw a t-shirt that's some variation on
Red Dawn.
Maybe, yeah.
Go for it.
I might.
Yeah.
People need to go to our gift shop and buy stuff, too. Well, they don't need to.
But they should.
You have
the freedom to. We're encouraging you to exercise your freedom to buy our merchandise.
We have the freedom to tell you must. It's a libertarian imperative.
Yes, if you want LibPair to exist.
But if you want something free, almost free, we're still giving away that camera, and the drawing is next week. So go to the site and click on the Win a Digital Camera link, and you can see how.
Right. Basically, just help promote us. We're trying to come up in the world.
Pimp us. Go on iTunes. Review us. Go on the site. Review us. Pimp us everywhere else, and then tell us about
Word.
It. So you know what the name of this cast is, Nima?
No, and like I say, I never really know, even when you tell me, because then you go and change it.
I like that you say that. You're going to probably say that every time I say it.
I am, indeed.
But the name of this episode is Government is Both Trick and Pimp.
Yeah. And John.
What's
the government
up?
Is the whole game. They're the John, too.
I know. And that's a shout out to my friend David Scott Ewers, old friend from San Francisco. He was asking me on Facebook today what I think of the Wall Street protests. And I, you know, gave him my usual, they're confusing corporatism with capitalism. Capitalism's good. Corporatism is bad. Wall Street is corporatism.
Right.
It's worth protesting. And I think it's criminal that they're getting tased and maced and arrested. But I think that a lot of people protesting from the interviews I've heard, with the exception of a small number of them who are libertarian or anarchist or
I think there's a few liberty people there. And I know that
there are
some of the New Hampshire people were going to go over there and try to push it towards a more libertarian point of view. And I think that's noble. I think from what I've heard, you know, a lot of these people, they're just really disillusioned with everything. And maybe this is how we sort of help win the intellectual battle is S is effed up. And I think there was a guy with a sign to that effect that basically is fucked up. And people have that sense all around the country, all around the world. And so I think they're just lashing out at whoever they think they should blame. So it's up to us as sort of the people who believe we have a coherent philosophy. I think the libertarian philosophy doesn't have the inconsistencies that a lot of, you know, modern liberal or modern just conservative philosophies have. And so I think it's easy for us to fill that void. And I think that we should look at the Wall Street protest as an opportunity, not just something to ignore.
Yeah. And, you know, my example, and David agreed with the government is both trick and pimp. And he was the one who said, I think government is more trick than pimp because of bailouts and things like that. And I said, well, yeah, but they're also pimp because they can slap it all down. I mean, look at the Gibson things. Look at everything.
Yeah, I think they're definitely the pimp. They decide they're the pimp and the pusher. You know, they decide who sells what on what block. I mean, that's in essence what they are. They're the monopoly of force. They own the block, and the whole block, America, is the block. So they don't want you selling something, you don't sell it.
And like a gang, you know, the only reason they own the block is because they said we own the block and we're willing to kill people for
right.
it. Or punish them.
Literally, that's what they did. They said, we own the block, and then they went through and killed all the Indians, and were like, okay, it's our block.
Yeah, and then killed everybody ever since, or put them in a cage. You know, I was thinking about, I had this in the show notes for a long time, I haven't mentioned it. In the punk rock scene in San Francisco, actually not even the punk rock scene, but like the anarchist punk homeless scene, which was actually a scene in San Francisco, when I first moved there in the mid-80s, Those people used the term tax to mean steal. Like, you know, if the skinheads came down on Haight Street and beat up the peace punks and took their money and their weed, they were like, oh, the skinheads taxed us today. Or like, the fucking skin, you know,
yeah,
like not mellow like that, but like, we got fucking taxed today.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I like that word tax to be synonymous with stealing on this, you know, street crime.
Yeah, I like that a lot. How surprising that it came about in San Francisco.
Well, they were anarchists. I mean, these were, a lot of these people were literally anarchists. They were left anarchists, but they were anarchists. You know, these were not people who voted Democrat to try to get things changed. You know, they were people that would protest. I mean, going back to Dead Kennedys, we keep going back to them. Jerry Brown this week undid the thing that Schwarzenegger did where there was a tax issue with Amazon associates. Remember, mm-hmm. like everyone in California got a letter from Amazon saying,
you can't be a part of the program anymore.
Yeah. Right. Well, everyone just got a letter again from Amazon saying Jerry Brown has reversed this. So everyone's cheering. And it's like, you know, he didn't really do anything. He just undid a bad law. He didn't give anyone any freedoms. And Jerry Brown was governor of California before, so long ago that Dead Kennedys had a song called California Uber Alles about how bad he was.
Right.
You know, so the... The punks and the anarchists weren't like a lot of them are now, where they're like, yes, Obama will change everything. You know, they knew better. And of course, then that song was redone, same music, different words, when Reagan became governor. It was called We've Got a Bigger Problem Now.
Yeah, yeah.
Last call for alcohol. Last call for your freedom of speech. Drink up. Happy hour is now enforced by law. Don't forget our house special. It's called the Tricky Dicky Screwdriver. It's got one part Jack Daniels, two parts purple Kool-Aid, and a jigger of formaldehyde from the jar with Hitler's brain in it we got in the back storeroom. Again with fascist cravings, still you make the president. Human rights will soon go away. I am now going shopping. Now I command all of you. Now you're gonna pray in school, and I'm a church and Christian too. California, Uber Alice. California, Uber Alice. Uber Alice, California. Could the devil control you? Still you think it's natural. Nigga knocking for the master race. Still you wear a happy face. Because your eyes can't happen here. Alexander Haig is near. Vietnam will come back, you say. Johnny Army, you will pay. Johnny Army, you will pay. California, Uber Alles. California, Uber Alles. Uber Alles. California, Uber Alles. California.
And we referenced lines from both of those in passing, in homage, in some of the songs in the movie.
I think it was Dan Banning has those two references, so.
California, Uber Alles, dictating from the palace, got way bigger problems, yeah, Banning's war causing, when the Uber hits the fan, I'll be surviving with my band, with more AK ammo than all Afghanistan.
Yeah, you know, I thought of a really funny thing we should have put in in the credits that we didn't was we should have said Dan Banning's shirts and ties, courtesy of Walmart.
We should have.
You know, because like newscasters, they always say who Brooks Brothers makes Bill O'Reilly suits or
right,
whatever.
Right, and who did the hair. Yeah.
Yeah, I told DJ I needed some cop clothes, and she went to Walmart and got me a nice tie. Nice looking tie. You know, enough to film it and have it fall apart the next wash.
Well, yeah, I don't think you're supposed to wash ties.
The shirt,
did it fall
man.
Apart?
No. Where do you buy your shirts and ties?
Oh, wherever I see a decent one. I mean, sometimes I wear stuff I bought at Goodwill on the air, and it looks fine. Just wherever I can find something cheap and quality, you know. I've bought shirts at Walmart. Yeah. I bought shirts at Macy's. So wherever I can find a good deal, and I like the color and whatnot.
So Operation Fast and Furious. Eric Holder saying he only knew about it a month ago or 2 months ago. You and I were talking about it 3 months ago.
Yeah, and everybody was talking about it 2 months ago. There's no way. I mean, I don't know. Maybe these guys are actually that out of touch. I could see that. I could see, you know, going to and from your big plush government office to your big tax eater home and not really paying attention to the rest of the world and just wondering how you're going to screw people next. So maybe he hadn't.
Do you think they wake up and say, how will I screw the people today?
I don't think that it sounds like that in their head. I mean, I don't know. I've never been inside the mind of a bureaucrat, and I can't really think that way. I mean, maybe if I spent 10 or 20 years in quote-unquote public service, I would get a sense of what goes through their heads. I think some of them buy their own BS and think that, you know, they're doing this for our own good, and, you know, they're providing some kind of benefit to the world by controlling people's lives. I mean, they have to. I think that's how they sleep at night, right? I don't think they're overtly evil.
I saw Cheney on TV praising Obama for droning the first Americans the other day.
Yeah, yeah, and that is definitely, that's our one of our biggest tyrannies we need to talk about today. I think that's the...
And now, the Nima News with Nima Vedati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
The tyranny of the
so decade. I guess war is a uniting force, you know. It'll like people that never agree on anything can agree on it's okay to drone brown Americans.
Well, the establishment left and right have always agreed on the need to go to war and the need to be at war and killing people and the war economy.
Well, you know, I'm watching my cats beat each other up. I mean, it's play fighting, but they're like can you hear it? Mm-hmm. I mean, you probably can hear it on the podcast. They're like Peanut's up on two legs, boxing Fuzzy. Nice. And it all started a minute ago where one of them was up higher than the other. And like, but he was on the couch, but he was down low and he was kind of crouched. And then he just pounced. And, you know, I was thinking about war and I'm wondering, you know, not to excuse it. And I think it is justified when someone's attacked. But the fact that it's ongoing and always and corporatized and automated now, do you think that it serves some innate human lizard brain need?
I think it does in some people. I mean, that I think that's how they get people to sign up. And I don't know if it's innate or I think there's something there, but I think our society more than other societies encourages it. I think kids are grown up and violence is always used. Violence through authoritarianism is always shown as a good thing in our society. All the media we watch, it's always good guys killing bad guys. That's the main motif of just about anything at least young men watch.
But they're always government good guys. You know,
right.
It's very rare. I mean, if it's a civilian, it's usually a rogue cop who got fired for taking down too many bad guys and stepping on their constitutional
rights.
Right,
it's the quote-unquote good guys. It's authority killing the people who are not the favored groups. That's what it always is.
Who step out of the norm.
Right.
And engage in peaceful commerce sometimes.
And in people's head, I mean, they portray it as good guys and bad guys. The media makes you identify with the authority as the good guys. And whoever else is the outside is the bad guy.
And we'll bring this back to the droning thing. But I was thinking the other day about Fed goons and kitten stompers. And look on our glossary if you don't know what those things mean. You know, I was thinking about how a while back, the Southern Poverty Law Center, who I think are just strictly McCarthyist, they are the new Joe McCarthy.
Yeah.
Because they're painting everybody in with the same brush, whether they're terrorists or constitutionalists. But the SPLC got the DHS to declare that people who are romantic about early America and the founders and the Revolutionary War to be worth watching as terrorists, which we're actually going to talk about an upcoming cast. We're going to have an upcoming cast that's going to be called Thomas Jefferson Was a Bad Man. And I think that's going to poke a lot of people. But With the Alien and Sedition Act, he did some really heinous things, you know, while pretending to hate it, but then became president and used it on his enemies, including for just saying that he was sleeping with his slaves. He arrested
people. It's such a great example of why the system doesn't work, of why absolute power does corrupt absolutely. That's an axiom, and I think it is completely true, and you can see it in that case. The man who is credited with all of these freedom ideas actually, you know, imprisoned people with the Alien and Sedition Acts.
For speaking.
Because he was president. Once you have that office, which just goes to show you why we can't have an imperial presidency, we can't have a system where you give one person this massive amount of authority, or one group of people this massive amount of authority, no matter how great they are, no matter how idealistic they are going into it, that power is going to corrupt them. And it's the power that you need to remove. It's the system you need to take away.
And I was thinking about how the people who enforce those DHS edicts of keep an eye on these, you know, basically the jackbooted thugs at all levels of government, federal, state, local, probably see themselves as the true heirs of the Minutemen in some sick and twisted way.
They must. I mean, nope. People don't go through life thinking they're bad guys, no matter who you are.
I mean, the National Guard, there are people who believe that the National Guard is the militia of the Second Amendment. Not to pick on the National Guard, but there are people who believe gun ownership is not an individual right and that the militia has been replaced by the National Guard, and that's now the militia, so we don't need private gun ownership.
Which is a really dangerous thought, and it's, I think, also relevant when you talk about the National Guard nowadays to bring up that they're not staying at home guarding the nation. Oftentimes, they're deployed now to the Middle East.
Overseas. Yeah. And, you know, when I think of National Guard, there's two things that come to my mind, and I'm sure there are people who would disagree with this, you know, because they do good things. They go down and pull people out of floods and stuff. But I think of the Kent State shootings in the 70s, where they shot four unarmed, peaceful, well, probably loud, but peaceful protesters and killed them at Kent State University. And, you know, I think of the Katrina thing of the National Guard from Ohio helping go door to door and take guns away from people for no reason.
Right.
Because the mayor said
right.
So.
And that's the most important thing to remember, is that all these people that are supposed to be there for protection, they're there for protection of the government. They're there for protection of the status quo and the state and the powers that be. And if you're on the other side of that, then they're not going to be protecting you. That's why people really need to make the distinction between America and the United States government. It's two different things, when I think of it, at least.
And with the horizontal enforcement, you know, a lot of it is people willing to give their kids up for cannon fodder and even encouraging it. I mean, I would say, I wouldn't say a majority, but I would say there are millions of American mothers and fathers who would rather see their kid die in service in the war than be a war protester.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see that video, Country Joe and the Fish at Woodstock? I'm going to put that in here because that was a song that was really important to me as a kid.
Yeah, I did see that. It was a good video. Good video. I wish we could continue to have war protests like that these days. I mean, it really amazes me how we don't have this giant anti-war movement like there used to be.
They'd come out with the sound cannons and ruin you.
Well, that would be a good thing, I think, because it's so easy to see who the bad guy is in that situation. To me, at least. Maybe not to those parents who'd rather their kids die for the state. And I remember a writer, I forget who it was, but there's a pretty bigwig libertarian guy that would go off on this and basically ask, why do you love the state more than you love your own family? Why do you love the state more than you love your kids? And if you do, I mean, I find that morally reprehensible that you would love some oligarchy or some political construct more than your own flesh and blood.
I mean, I hate Michael Moore, but he's done a couple clever things, and one is standing out in front of Congress and asking congressmen if they're willing to take a application form to sign their child up for the war.
Yes, that was a very good move on his part.
You know, being anti-war, I was thinking the other day, is the most long-running, consistent value I've ever had in my life. As
Me
far
too.
As anything freedom, when I was 4 years old, I was watching the Vietnam War on TV and going, this is fucking wrong. I mean, I wasn't even pro-legalization of drugs until I was 11 or 12 and tried them. Remember, I told you I tried to capture someone and take them to the police station at knife point or thought about it, you know, because they had pot.
You were being a good little horizontal enforcer back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of horizontal enforcement, the opposite you've come up with is horizontal liberation. And our movie, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, which is great portable horizontal liberation. You can hand it to family and friends and undo 13 years of public schooling in 99 minutes. It is now available for pre-order on Amazon. So go to the link in this podcast and click on it and go to Amazon and order it. And it comes out December 6th, but you'll probably get it before then if you pre-order it. That's been my
experience. The idea with it is not necessarily to preach to the choir. It is to do some horizontal liberation. In fact, there was a blogger recently, I think he was in Chicago or one of those Midwest type cities where there's a lot of gun control and there had been a lot of gun violence recently. And he explained...
It was Philly.
It was
Philadelphia.
Okay. Well, he explained in his blog and credited our movie with changing his ideas that guns are really just objects. And you can use them for good or for evil, but you can use them to protect yourself in those type of situations from aggressors.
I actually had that conversation and intrigued somebody who's a writer of all places at the New York Times today.
Oh, wow. Was it the one who misblogged our movie as some other movie?
It wasn't him, but it's the guy I contacted to get it fixed. There's a movie that's not very good called The Road to Freedom that's a drama that's not good, according to all accounts I've read. And... we probably would have picked a different name if we knew that a movie with part of our movie's name in it, you know, was coming out at the same time. But it was like, it came out when ours was done, so we didn't know. It's reviewed and given a horrible review on the New York Times. And under it, it says The Road to Freedom, alternate title, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. And I wrote to one person, and she said, I'm not the right person, write to this guy. And I wrote to this guy, and he said he'd get it taken off there. And he said, what an intriguing idea. I never thought of any connection between guns and weed, but it's food for thought. So I'm going to write him back and say, hey, you want to see
it? Yeah, see if they could review it. That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think even a bad review in the New York Times would be good.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the New York Times.
You know, I don't like the New York Times politically most of the time, but as a movie and book review source, they are really good and really respectable.
Okay.
So I'd take a bad review from them rather than no review and maybe get a good review.
And even a bad review, we could say, well, I mean, it's the New York Times. They hate guns, so there you go.
I'm also talking to someone at PBS about it, reviewing it or doing a story.
Ah, that'd be wonderful. Yeah, yeah. Although they are PBS, so they might hate it as well.
Well, you know how news works. You always look for an interesting angle, and especially with the, you know, the letters being sent out by the ATF, there might be a story there.
Ah, yes.
For them.
Horrible letters by the ATF, and another example of how you have federal agencies basically acting like, and they're appointed, they're not electable, and they're acting on basically as judges, you know, deciding what the law means, and pretty much deciding how they're going to enforce
Congress.
And Congress, yeah.
They're being Congress and judges, which is not the bureaucrat's role. They are being Congress in that they are making laws, and they are being judges in that they're interpreting laws.
Yeah, and very horrible thing, and not the way the system is supposed to work. And as I said before, I think the system is flawed inherently, but I think this is important to also note when the system doesn't even do what it says it's supposed to do, which is one of the main flaws, I think, anyway.
Hey, I want to give a big Freedom Fiends what's up to our new listener at Christmas Island.
Go ahead and explain what Christmas Island is, Michael.
Well, I saw this in the what's up stats. We have a regular listener now from Christmas Island. They have their own domain. I don't know if they're a country, but if you have your own domain, you're more than a state or a protectorate. They're controlled by Australia, but they're really in the middle of nowhere. I mean, they're somewhere between Australia and Malaysia, you know, 2,000 miles out into the ocean. It's a tiny little island. It has a population of about 1,000 people. And I just like the fact that since we have one listener there, 0.1% of their population is a fan.
Yeah. Although, I wonder, it seems like it could almost be LibPair living on an island like that, right?
I thought about that, but then I looked at it, and it really doesn't look like it. It really looks very government-controlled by Australia and... really no economy. They used to have a lot of mining there, and then in the 80s, Australia shut it down. Okay. So
I think I read on the wiki entry that it's some type of national park or something now for Australia.
I think a few of the people that work there are scientists, and then a few of them are just Australian government employees that run the island, but it's not so much a tourist destination.
Right. Although I could see if you had a little chunk on the coast, maybe I'm wrong, maybe our listener can call and tell us a little bit more about it, but it seems like if you had a little chunk on the coast, And you could be self-sufficient through fishing or whatever, and maybe just be left alone. You know, you're out in the middle of the Indian Ocean, nobody to tell you what to smoke and what not to smoke and how to eat and how not to eat. Could be good.
Dream on, man. Yeah, dream on.
Maybe. It's almost like seasteading.
So yeah, seasteading. We're going to do a longer bit on a future cast about this after we read more about it, but mention it and who's into it.
Seasteading is the idea, you know, it's always been a classic liberal idea, the idea of homesteading, that you take a piece of land.
Libertarian or liberal?
Classical liberal. I think John Locke, you know, is sort of the progenitor.
Which means libertarian.
Basically, proto-libertarian.
John Locke, the economist, the more guns, less crime guy?
No, John Locke, like the guy who Jefferson got all his ideas from.
Yeah, the English guy that...
the guy who came up with life, liberty, and property, basically.
There's a quote from Boston Tea Party about the value of rifles, and it said, when the Redcoats came to oppress the Patriots in early America, the Patriots didn't stand there quoting John Locke at them. They shot them. They shot them often, and they shot them well. Which I was thinking, we were talking about if the Second Amendment had said, if anyone breaks this or violates these rights of yours, you get to use the guns on them. I was thinking, what if there were a declaration of America or of a new iteration of America where everything in the Bill of Rights said, and anyone who breaks these rights, you get to shoot them.
Anyone who tries to infringe on these rights gets shot.
And I was thinking that the name for that could be Hassel Doctrine.
So if somebody hassles
instead
you.
Of Castle Doctrine, it'd be Hassel Doctrine. If they hassle you, you could shoot them.
Right.
We don't advocate shooting people, but we're talking about theoretical things.
Theoretical. Yeah. We're just throwing some philosophical ideas out here.
Freedom fiends!
Basically, Locke came out with, you know, he crafted the idea of homesteading, basically, as we used it in modern libertarian sense, which is that you take a piece of land, if nobody owns it, you homestead, you make it yours, you basically claim ownership by mixing your labor with it. Like, say you put up a fence, and then, you know, what? Because you sat there and did the work to build the fence, you've claimed that property, you've shown you've claimed it. You can't just say, oh, I own all that, and not do anything about it. That's not homesteading. So the idea was and then it's yours. It's your property. You have your right to your life, your liberty, and your property, and you've claimed that as your property. So,
and there's no property left that's unclaimed on the earth, but there is a lot of sea that's left.
There is a lot of sea. And you know, the thing about the property that's unclaimed, there is a lot of property out there that's just claimed by the government, and it's public property, which I think is a horrible thing. You know, most of Wyoming would be great for homesteading, but 60% of the state is owned by, you know, the feds. Okay. You don't want people to move to Wyoming.
I'm kidding. I'm just like, if anybody from New York City or Los Angeles drove across Wyoming, their jaws would just drop. I mean, there is so much open space here.
Yeah, it's wonderful, and it's a good thing. But again, it's great. Whenever people used to talk to me about overpopulation and overcrowding, I'd say, go live in Wyoming for a few months, and then come and talk to me about overpopulation and overcrowding.
You know, and I'd say the government doesn't value what they own. For instance, recently the White House published a map of Obama's trip. You know, basically he's campaigning, but they called it something else. But on the map, they mislabeled Wyoming as Colorado and Colorado as Wyoming.
They switched the two, yeah.
Which is why I live here, because no one knows where it is, not even the federal government.
Well, it's also a good case study of, you know, a lot of times liberals especially have this idea that, you know, the best and brightest are in our government, and there's a good process for getting these people to be officials and to be appointed, and they know so much, and they're dispassionate, you know, they're going to do the right thing, and they're smart enough. That just goes to show you they can't even pass, you know, a kindergarten geography test. These are the kind of
guys.
Well,
and we've talked about this. Some of the best and brightest are working for the government, but they're tucked away in some research lab. They're given their agenda. They can't work with scientific process. They're told what to find. And they can't efficiently do anything because the government, as we said, is a dinosaur that's too stupid to know it's chewing on its tail.
Right.
There are some smart motherfuckers working for the government, especially in science.
Right, but they don't get to fully express their genius. They are cogs in the machine, basically. They have to do what they're told. They're nothing more than, I mean, they're more than slaves, but basically the idea is they don't get to own their own work, and they have to come up with the results that their bureaucratic bosses are gonna like. And if they don't, then those results don't get used. If they come up with, you know, results that don't push the party line, the study's just ignored. And then they don't get put back on, or they don't get the next government grant. So it behooves them to sort of toe the party line and keep the status quo going, because that's what's feeding their families.
I saw a great t-shirt the other day. It said, if I had a dollar for every time capitalism was blamed for something the government did, I'd be a fat documentary filmmaker with a baseball cap. And I almost bought it, but then I realized I am a fat documentary filmmaker with a baseball cap. So
you're not Michael Moore type fat. You got a little chub, but I don't think you're not fat.
Michael Moore does not give me a chubby dough.
Yeah. No.
You know, he's one of the reasons I became a filmmaker. I was back when I didn't know how the world worked. I was really enamored with, I didn't like his later stuff, even though I was still statist, but I really liked his Roger and Me film. Did you ever see it?
No, I never saw that. What's it about?
And his one where he's on tour with his book. I forget what it's called. Roger and Me is him trying to get an interview with the head of General Motors.
Ah, okay. Okay. Because he's you know, from Detroit,
basically,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, basically saying, why did you lay off all my friends and family? Mm-hmm. And just could not get an interview with him. And there's a lot of other stuff in it, but that's kind of the thread through it, is him trying to get an appointment with the guy and not getting it, and then finally doing an attack interview on the street. But
so he finally tracked him down, like, on the way to lunch or something?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. But I think we started to talk about seasteading 10 minutes ago and forgot about it.
Well, I think we were just going to say that we were going to do it. I'm going to research it more. You know more about it than I do. I'm going to research it more, and we're going to do an extendo okay. at some point on it. And did you mention the people that are pushing it, the rich people that are behind it?
There's a couple of well-off people who are sort of liberty-minded. I forget the second one, but I know one of the main ones is the guy. I don't know if he's the CEO of PayPal or the co-owner.
I think he started it.
I don't know if he started the idea of seasteading, but I know started PayPal. Yeah. That's right, the founder of PayPal. And he's put up a few million dollars to help these seasteaders get started. Basically, what they want to do is build these sort of offshore platforms that would be close to bigger cities. Like, I think the first one they're working on now is going to be just across the international waters border next to San Francisco. So the idea—
I hope that they plan on being armed, because otherwise—
I hope they do, too. I heard an interview with one of their ambassadors on a Stefan Molyneux podcast, and he was basically saying, you know, people can be armed, but he doesn't really think – he thinks that, you know, if the government wants to come and shut it down, they're going to be able to anyway. I mean
– well, I'm thinking about pirates, too.
Right, right.
You know, unaffiliated non-government pirates.
Yeah, maybe. But I think that's part of the reason they want to be sort of close to shore, closer to an actual government. I mean,
so they can scurry back to their condos in San Francisco?
Maybe.
Or so they can so after they say, we don't need no government, we're going to start our own island, and then when they get attacked, they can call the Navy from Alameda outside of San Francisco to come protect them?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that all remains to be seen. But I think one of the parallels the guy was trying to draw was, you know, Hong Kong. Basically, it's this, you know, it's not really controlled by anyone per se. It's almost autonomous. And it's because of that freedom, it's become this sort of hot spot for commerce.
Well, it's like China with hookers and gambling and drugs out in the open, isn't it?
I mean, I've never been to Hong Kong, so I don't know. I just know it is sort of a hotbed for commerce, and most of that is because it's sort of...
Well, I don't think that there was a revolution fought to free them. I think it was...
No,
They were part of Britain,
right.
And then Britain said, we release thee for some reason.
It was some mandate they had that expired in like 2000, like 50 years ago or something. They wrote up that Britain would cede it back to whatever in 2000, you know, because I guess that long ago, the year 2000 seemed like, oh, wow, the future.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and give you more on seasteading in the future, but we did want to bring that up just because it is kind of a pie-in-the-sky idea, but, I mean, that's sort of how you have to get started in coming up with the way the future is going to work. You know, you have to come up with weird or ideas that seem out of the box and see what sticks and what works. That's how progress happens.
I've heard of a term for it of creating parallel entities, like not necessarily anti-government but extra-government outside of the government. But the thing is, even if you create a system that works better than the government outside the government's going to try to come in and A, tax you, you know, like beating up the little punk rocker pacifists on the street and taking their money, and just try to control it for no other reason than they're a big amoeba that exists to control.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I could see there being restrictions placed on, like, saying, if you trade with this seastead or this autonomous zone, there's going to be, you know, this much tariff imposed. You know, you'll have to pay 50% tariff or something like that.
And the UN's going to want to get involved.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. But the thing is, maybe if it's small scale enough at first, you know, it can fly under the radar. Maybe, you know, because a lot of times governments are slower to react. So maybe they can build up some kind of legitimacy before the regulators really get a sense of what's going on. It remains to be seen, but I think it's a very interesting thing for liberty-minded people to keep their eye on. And, you know, I've had this idea before, basically just for partying, you know, because you have the gambling boats and whatever that go out and people can gamble because they're on a boat. Why not do that with prostitution and, you know, have like full service boats where you go out, get a hooker, get a bag of weed.
A ship of horrors.
A ship of fun. A free ship. You know, you go out and do whatever you want. Any vice, anything basically that's illegal or restricted as long as it doesn't hurt anybody.
You'd still have to be armed, man, or somebody would come to try to take it from you.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not a big deal. I mean, how hard is it to be armed? You know, you have a couple guys on deck with some nice rifles.
50 cal.
And, yeah, a couple 50
cal machine guns.
Yeah, and you're okay. And I mean, it's not like the U.S. Navy is anywhere near U.S. waters anyway. They're all out in the Persian Gulf, so.
Yep. So a couple things I want to get out of the way. One is somebody asked me why we mentioned race at all in the Gould, Arkansas story. You know, the town where they eliminated free speech and we mentioned that they were black and the people that were fighting against it were black. Basically, just I mentioned it and I didn't say this. The reason we mentioned it is because I find it ironic because blacks have been so universally oppressed as a group with things like free speech and with freedoms that it's ironic to me that they would, once they get the government guns behind them, try to take away, some of them would try to take away people's rights.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And I saw an interesting example of UN Agenda 21 in action. Was there was a guy in Idaho last week, lived on a bunch of acres, and there was a bear on his property, and he thought his kids were out playing in that part of the yard. They weren't. They were somewhere else in the house or in the other part of the yard. But he stood on his porch and he shot the bear in self-defense for his kids.
Right.
And he's being fined like $100,000 by
Yikes.
The feds or something.
And also on his property is, I think, the big key to that one. Now, did he make a mistake here? Did he go and call the game warden or some official?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a saying about wolves in this part of the country, shoot, shovel, shut up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
But, you know, burying a 400-pound bear is a little, you need machinery to easily shovel, I guess. But, you know, a lot of people that own land like that have some earth-moving equipment, but we're not suggesting he should have broken the law, but you know, what he did was he, in good faith, called the game warden or called somebody and said, you know, this happened, just to let him know. He called the police when you should never call the police, they say in those rap songs you like.
A lot more people than rappers say never talk to police.
I know.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess he probably did do it in good faith, and look where it got him. $100,000 is not chump change. I mean, that's like life-ruining type stuff, especially if it's, yeah, if it's a government-imposed debt, which I don't think you can get rid of, you know, through bankruptcy or anything like that. So he is stuck being effed because he didn't want a bear to eat his kids. Oh, what a bad guy.
Yep. So, you know, yet another person thought we were just a video blog.
Yeah, I saw that. No, you were going to say don't put the videos up or just link them, but
I'm going to do it. I'm going to keep putting them up. It's not our problem.
It's not a problem. It still brings more traffic in, and maybe the solution is just to have a larger, I mean, I know we did this already, but a larger banner that says play podcast. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, we had a record download of audio the other day, so apparently someone's listening to it, although that's partly because we're doing hour and a half casts now, and I think we're going to keep doing hour and a half casts. We reserve the right to not do it every week, but we're liking it. We got a lot to talk about. And there's a new little thing on the podcast. There's a new link over on the right. It's a link to the folder that contains all the audio. So if you like it a lot, you want to go right-click on all of them and download every one of them quickly without having to go through the podcast, you can do that now.
Of course, making it easier for all y'all freedom fiends out there. You got to serve the fiends well, man. The fiends are customers. I do.
We have a good review. We are serving Brian Singer well. He said on iTunes, which people should go review us and rate us on. He said, "Each week, I'm growing to enjoy this podcast more and more. It's like being a fly on the wall, listening to a discussion of a wide range of liberty issues between two guys who are clearly really good friends." Aww. "Each week, the hour goes by too quickly. Nima and Michael discuss everything from guns to prohibition to hip-hop to whatever in the news catches their fancy or their ire. Yet, even in this casual discussion format, they stick to core libertarian anarchist principle, non-aggression principle. Guns don't kill people, governments do. We own our bodies and therefore have the right to put or not put whatever we want into them, etc. I'm a big fan of the Mises podcast, which are educational, informative, and serious for the most part. Michael and Nima show that anarchists can have fun as well. Seriously, add this one to your list of freedom podcasts. You won't forget it. Oh yeah, one more thing. The sound quality is fantastic, and they stick to an agenda for each cast, so while it is informal, I've never heard any inane rambling."
Yet.
Yet.
Keep holding on. I dig that. And I think we talked about this before in our private discussions, Michael, that, you know, we want to have fun with this. We don't want to scare you. We don't want you to have nightmares after listening to the cast. There is a lot of tyranny in the world, but you got to have a sense of humor about it. I'd rather laugh about it than cry about it. So that's my whole thing, and I think that's yours too, Michael. And the other thing is access. I mean, people can be turned off a lot of times by things that are too serious or too scary. And so I think there are people who – I mean, my wife won't watch dramas on TV. She won't watch horror movies. She'll watch a sitcom all day long. And so I think we're –
I hate horror movies. I don't watch horror movies.
I don't either. Not because they scare me, just because I can't really be scared by something I know is fiction. You know, yeah. A documentary can scare me. I've been scared by watching documentaries before. But I think we want to be sort of a nonfiction sitcom genre of the libertarian podcast world. And so, I mean, I'm not saying we're hilarious guys, but I think we're more lighthearted than your average podcaster.
I have some hilarious tyranny.
Okay, go for it.
There's a group of teachers that believes that using white paper as the paper you write on in school is racist, and they want to mandate that everyone writes on brown paper.
Well, isn't that racist then too? Because then it's just the brown paper. What about black people? Do they get to write on black paper?
And have you ever written on? I mean, off white paper is the most visually appealing to write on. You know, and they'd say that's racist because I'm saying white is best. But it's more like it's a matter of color and contrast and readability.
Yeah,
you know, whenever I see a website that's like a red background with purple lettering on it, I just immediately assume that whoever wrote it and made it is schizophrenic and whatever is in it is crazy. And it usually
is. Or colorblind. Yeah. Yeah. This is like a girl claiming in math class that she will only use an XX axis to graph on instead of an XY axis.
Yes.
It's silly, and it really bugs me when people nitpick these little things that obviously aren't planned, and I doubt anybody has ever thought to themselves how racist it is that they must write on white paper. I just can't see that happening.
And I'd say the answer is get rid of public schools, and then you can homeschool your kid with whatever
paper you want.
hard to write on paper you want.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. People don't even use paper that much anymore. They use computers. I mean, what are you supposed to do?
I know. And even so, like, you know, if you look at the Freedom Fiends podcast website, it's very easy to read, even though there's a lot on it. And the background is white, but it's slightly off-white. And I tried a bunch of different colors and text combinations and backgrounds, and none of them work better than just the WordPress default, which is slightly off-white, white with black text on it. And, you know, really, it's not racist, because when you use black text on white, white is just the background. Black is where the real meat of it is, where the information is.
Right. The white's being passive. The black is the active.
Yeah. So. There you go.
So just a bunch of BS by people who, for some reason, haven't figured out that there's a lot more important and pressing issues that are really racist and really horrible in the world, and decided for some reason to pick on paper of all things.
So, you know what this sound is?
What sound? Is that you puffing on your e-cigarette, Michael?
Yep, we got the electronic cigarettes. We love them.
Yeah.
I haven't quit tobacco yet because I still have a part of a carton, but I don't think I'm going to buy more cigarettes when I run out.
Good deal, yeah. I think we talked about them on last cast or the cast before. I just gotten mine, and I turned you onto them at Vapor Smith's I think they're fantastic.
You may have saved my life, you know, because I've always thought smoking would kill me.
Yeah, well, hopefully these won't.
DJ doesn't smoke nearly as much as I do, but she's really, I gave her one of them and she loves it because she can smoke it in the office.
Right, and that's part of the reason I love it is I can do it at work.
You know, it's not that she isn't allowed to go take breaks. She's just too busy to go take breaks. And she gets stressed out and, you know, wants a cigarette for 3 hours before she can get one sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the same situation with me. You know, if I'm under deadline, you know, I got to sit there and write. And in the past, I'd have to still allot 5 minutes every half hour to go out and take a few puffs of my tobacco pipe or even, you know, longer to roll myself up a home roll. Now I just take a few hits of the e-cig and I'm good to go.
Yep.
Yeah. They're pretty pimp.
So micro broadcasting.
Micro broadcasting. Okay. Like pirate radio?
Or not. There's a thing called FCC Part 15, which is a little, I don't know if it's a loophole, but it's just a thing in the FCC rules where if you meet certain criteria, you can legally broadcast without a license on the left part of the dial on an unused channel. If you're not interfering with anybody else, if you use less than a tenth of a watt output, if you don't cuss, if you don't take advertising, and if you announce the name of your station regularly like a regular station would.
Okay.
And there are people that do this, and I'm going to link the micro broadcasting article on Wikipedia and a transmitter that you can buy. The transmitters, I mean, if you just get them out of the box, they transmit about 300 yards, maybe. But if you really take a lot of care with it, including if you're on a hill and if you have a good antenna and if everything's shielded, you know, for like $100 for the transmitter or $100 for an antenna, you can get like a 1 mile in each direction radius. And in a city, you know, you could reach several thousand people with that.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I guess my question is, with the internet, why?
Exactly. It used to be kind of the internet. It used to be what people did to get their thought out. You know, right. Back when people published fanzines and Xeroxed them, you know, made zines and handed them out at shows. It was kind of like the technological equivalent of that. But the thing is, too, some people break FCC rules. We're not recommending doing this, just saying it happens. These transmitters can be tweaked to be a bit more powerful and have 1 watt or 10 watts. And people broadcast. The FCC does try to shut them down sometimes, but generally pretty slowly. And what some people do is broadcast from a car or a backpack on a bicycle, so it's harder to locate them. Huh. And don't broadcast at a regular time or anything.
Right,
you know?
Right.
There was an interesting horizontal enforcement. Did you read that that letter that guy wrote?
I did.
In Massachusetts?
It was ridiculous. It was basically a guy who had a whole website almost devoted to hating on this station that he called a pirate station and explaining all his efforts to tell the FCC and to narc on these guys because they were transmitting.
And he wrote to his congressman.
Can
you imagine? Like there were some kids in my neighborhood broadcasting punk rock without a license, and my congressman should do something about it.
Yeah. It really was disheartening for me. And then he went into this few paragraphs about how important it is to have an FCC and how important it is. And this was basically him explaining what his motivation was for trying to narc on this radio broadcaster was this is all public-owned spectrum, and we need the FCC to regulate who talks on it and who doesn't. And these guys were broadcasting on a frequency that nobody used. They weren't hurting anybody. I don't see what the big deal was, but he was just so offended that somebody would go over a regulator's head that he just couldn't let it go. It was very, very disgusting.
And he was an amateur radio, you know, a licensed amateur shortwave radio guy, a ham radio guy. You know, so he was familiar with the FCC and considered it his friend instead of this thing that gets in the way. You know, the thing with the FCC is like, it's changed in the past 15 or 20 years, too, of how they dole out licenses to where radio, you know, commercial radio, it's all owned by two or three giant multinational corporations. Clear Channel's one of them. I forget what the other one is, but.
Well, I mean, TV, too. I mean, media in general. I mean, in school, we always learned, and I don't know if it's changed now, but when I was in school 5-6 years ago, going through the media program at University of Texas, we always learned that 5 or 6 companies own pretty much every mainstream media outlet in the world, you know, Viacom and all that. And, you know, so the FCC obviously doesn't do a good job of keeping competition open. That, like any regulatory body, their main thing is keeping the big boys in charge, because the big boys are the ones who can afford to meet all the regulations, and the big boys are the ones who can spend all this money in corporate lawyers to build relationships with the regulators. And so any idea that the FCC is what keeps the media fair is obviously misguided.
Clear Channel, and they don't just own media, they own like nightclubs and stuff. I remember reading this this rant by Henry Rollins where he's talking about playing with his band Rollins Band, you know, probably 5 or 10 years ago in actually I think it's in the interview I did with him in $30 Music School. He talks about he's on tour in Amsterdam, and he's playing this club. It's like a 1,000-seat club / theater that used to be kind of ghetto in a cool way and had been bought out by Clear Channel and like made really corporate and with like, you know, bouncers with headsets and a whole bunch of rules. And they were coming over to him telling him like, well, you know, if you play this venue tonight, which, you know, you've flown here to do, if you play this venue tonight, you have to give 15% of your t-shirt receipts to us, to the house. And Rollins is just like, it was like some 21-year-old guy. And Rollins is like, I've been playing this club since before you were born.
Yeah, yeah. The funny thing was the way these outlaw radio, I guess I don't know if we want to get into who they were, but these guys that the narc was trying to narc on, they devoted a page of their website to basically hating on this guy. And so I don't know if you want to post both pages up there on the website.
Oh yeah, I'll post them.
It's very
funny. They were hating back, and they were like using government enforcement back at him. Like, first of all, they kind of were making him a target. Like, they had a picture of him and they literally superimposed a target on his head. And they said, so-and-so, you are now a target. And they listed his name, his home address, his phone number, his business address, his business phone number, his email address, his website, his IP address, and a map to his house.
Right.
And they said that he'd been arrested for arson as a teenager. They said that he was abusive to the disabled, because one of the people that ran this pirate station was disabled, and that he better keep his house up to code and not have any trash on the side of his house and this and that and this and that, or he'll be reported.
Right, right. And that's what happens when you have, you know, a government that is just a monopoly of force, is people try to use it on each other. When it's the government guns, people try to get the government guns to go attack who they don't like, and it's just a mess. And, you know, I don't think that they were out of line with what they did, because he did the same thing to them. I mean, he listed where their address was, what frequency they were broadcasting on, and he had all sorts of similar information on them trying to narc
I just
them.
Love that he wrote his congressman. What a pussy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, the police and the federal police aren't shutting them down. I'll write my congressman. Like, a congressman has time for that.
Yeah, yeah.
He might if it's election season and, you know, can say, think of the children.
Yeah, well, I just think it's a very sad mentality to write your congressman in general. I mean, I guess that's the way the system's supposed to work. Obviously, A, it doesn't. And B, it just always struck me as that's your first – or that's one of your lines of defense is writing your congressman. I mean, go talk to that person. If you really have a beef with them, talk to them one-on-one. That's where it should start. And if you really have a problem with them, try to work it out without getting the government guns involved. Of course, this guy's only problem was that the government guns didn't sanction this guy. So
there was no problem. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't infringing on his property rights. It wasn't infringing on a radio frequency he wanted to use. And if he did, you know, there's always empty frequencies over on the left of the dial that he could use.
Yeah, yeah. Which is one of the reasons I think the FCC is just so sort of outdated nowadays. I mean, they were created when there was a finite number of places you could broadcast because of the limited spectrum. And now with the internet, there's pretty much infinite spectrum. I mean, I know it's not airwave spectrum.
And the FCC tries to regulate the internet, which is fucking ridiculous.
Well, that's what they're trying to do now, because they want to get back in the game in the regulatory business. And, you know, they basically have no more power to control content and to control the information that gets out there anymore, because there is an infinite amount of space on the internet. And they want to still have a big spot.
You know what we've never talked about is net neutrality. I mean, it seems like there's so many bigger issues to cover, but do you know much about that?
I don't know a whole lot. I know it's some sort of lefty government plot, as far as I'm concerned, from what I've heard about it.
Yeah, and it's sold as, you know, freeing the people. Basically, what it means is that internet carriers, you know, the company you get your internet from your internet pipe from would not be able to, a couple things. One is they wouldn't be able to charge you based on how much you use, which I kind of like as an internet user, but I don't like as a person who believes in free commerce. You know, I think it could be on the model of how your water is. You know, the more you use, the more you pay for. I don't think they should have to take a loss because some law says so.
No.
And another thing is it says that they can't throttle certain types of traffic. Like, for instance, a Warner Brothers owned internet company can't give preferential treatment on Netflix to Warner Brothers movies and slow down movies from another studio. But I think the answer to that is just more competition. You know, you'd have the companies that maybe they cost a few bucks more, but they'd give you unlimited, unthrottled access.
Well, that's really the answer to everything. And I think that is the root of why government regulations don't work, is because they assume that there's a one-size-fits-all solution. They assume there should be one proper way of doing things, or there should be a limited spectrum of ways of doing things, when in reality, every person is completely unique, and they should have the ability to choose the right situation that fits them. But when you have regulations, first of all, you limit the amount of competition out there because you limit the access to it. You know, not anybody can start their own company because they have to jump through all these hoops. And second of all, you limit what those companies can do that are already there. So basically, you take away the main market force that provides the best service for people, which is competition. And so any idea that regulations can make services better, it's going about things the complete opposite way. No matter how good the intentions are, the effect is always going to be less competition, which means worse service for people.
I want to expand on that, but I want to give one more shout out to micro broadcasting and why I like it. And I still think it's a valid option for some things. Like, for instance, if your audience is old and not computer savvy, like a lot of churches do micro broadcasting, or, you know, if you just want to experiment with something else, if you just want to do it, it's not that expensive to get in it. It's legal to do. And I'd recommend people check it out. I got interested in it as a kid because I built a little transmitter, and I've talked about this. I built it into the handset of an old telephone when I was about 12. And it worked. I could turn on an FM radio, tune it to the left of the dial, and talk through the radio, kind of like a Mr. Microphone before they had them. And I used to walk around my neighborhood talking into it. I don't know if anyone ever heard it, but the thought that someone could was meaningful to me. Like, I grew up in this really little town, and I always wanted to get out of the little town, but I couldn't. So I wanted to get out of it with my mind. Like, I spent a lot of time in the library reading books and kind of visiting foreign lands and different worlds by reading books. I always wanted to be a writer because of that, and I've done that. And I always wanted to communicate with strangers around the world. Like, I used to write, they used to have pen pal listings in magazines, like people that wanted to write to other people.
Yeah.
And I'd write to strangers, and I'd send away for catalogs, and I'd write letters to the editor and try to get in the media. Like, one time there was a little article about me in the paper, and I thought I'd arrived, you know. And all of that is why I jumped on the internet really quick. You know, in 1996, I had a website that I built myself and really liked the idea. It kind of served all my purposes. Like, I could literally sit in my room and reach everyone in the world. And that's after I'd moved out of that town. I was living in San Francisco. Yeah. But, you know, the internet is good.
Oh, yeah. The internet is the best. It is the it's the new printing press. I've probably said that a million times, and I'll keep saying it. It is bigger to human society, I think, in terms of revolutionizing the way things work than the Gutenberg printing press was.
Especially since now most people can read. I mean, the Gutenberg press was made when not many people could read, and the elite wanted to keep it that way.
Right, right. Anytime you provide more information to a larger number of people, you have the chance to better society, and because you disperse the thought process, which disperses the decision-making process. People don't have to look to gatekeepers or the establishment to inform them of things. Then they can make their own decisions. And I think that's what we're seeing now, is people are looking less and less to mainstream sources and to people who have different government credentials, and they just go with what feels and seems true to them. They're allowed to seek their own truth.
Mainstream media is constantly quoting blogs and showing home shot videos too.
Right, right. Well, they're trying to keep up with it because they're realizing that that's how a lot of people get their content these days. But I think a lot of the problem with that is the mainstream media, they still primarily generate their content and produce their content for the TV audience. And then they just use the internet as another outlet. So I think they still suffer from all the old problems that they still suffered from. They're just trying to deliver it more on the web now.
Well, they're the dinosaur chewing on its tail.
Right. They're still the dinosaur chewing on its tail, but now they have their own website.
Well, not just that they have their own website, but they use other people's website as content. I mean, how many Weather Channel shows have user-generated video and pictures sent in of what the weather is in their town?
Right.
And the same thing with, like, you know, police brutality videos and just news. I mean, every mainstream TV news show now has something that says, oh, did you see some news and film it? Go to our website and upload it. And they use it.
Right.
And the New York Times review of books will quote some blogger no one's ever heard of.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is a good thing. It's a good thing that they're trying to do that. But I think that they are, in essence, just a middleman in that situation. I mean, and yeah, I think there's really a lot of better web sources where you can go at to be your middleman. And these days, because to me, the thing is the difference between broadcasting and narrowcasting. With TV and with mainstream, we're narrowcasting right now. It's a very niche thing. The people who listen to us,
which is why we get to say things you can't say when you're broadcasting in your day job.
Exactly. And that's the main thing. And I think that's what people want. I mean, when it comes to broadcasting, it always had to be the lowest common denominator. You know, in story meetings, it's always about what has the broadest appeal. And that prevents you from really delving deeply into positions that are one side or another side, or positions that might not be mainstream, because not everybody in the world is going to want to listen to that. So I think you really limit the debate when you have that kind of a situation. And I think when you have the opposite, when you have narrowcasting, you can really broaden your exploration of the true issues.
That was one of the things that was predicted that's come true in that 1970 book, Future Shock, was media that's tailored to the user. Although they didn't really see it as that it was going to be something that was user-generated and enabled everyone to own a printing press. You know, they say the press is only free if you own one. And if you have a computer now, you own a printing press and a radio station with your podcast and a broadcast, you know, a TV station with video.
Exactly. But
they didn't see things like YouTube, and they didn't see things like blogs. Basically, they said, you know, your electronic copy of the New York Times will be tailored to the kind of stories you want to hear.
Right.
They got it half right.
They got it half
or
right.
Or a third right, or a quarter right.
Well, nobody can ever get it all right.
So one of the things interesting about free market versus mainstream or government is two things I saw about government and statist organizations using the private sector as a metrics. Did you see this about the Waffle House Index and the Big Mac Index?
Yeah, I did.
Do you want to explain it?
From what I understood, the Waffle House Index was a FEMA thing for how bad the situation was in an area. Basically, if the Waffle House is still open, then it's not a bad situation, because Waffle House is, you know, pretty much open through everything. If they don't bring all their employees on, then things are starting to get a little bit more bad, because they're still serving people.
And if they're serving people but with a limited menu,
right,
it's kind of bad.
Right. But then if the Waffle House is closed, that's when you know the S hit the fan.
Yeah. And then the Big Mac Index is something that the venerated London magazine, The Economist, which is an economics magazine that's been going for about 100 years, came up with something. It's the Big Mac Index. It's basically how many Big Macs an hour of labor in different countries, in different scenarios, in different times will buy you.
Right, right. Which I think is really genius. And I remember when the minimum wage, whenever it changed, when I worked minimum wage, I remember noticing how the price of a Big Mac, or the price of different, I guess it was my value menu index, because the prices of things would change, things would leave the value menu, combo meals, it always seemed like an hour of labor is what a combo meal cost for in general. You know, your double quarter pounder with fries and a drink would track whatever the minimum wage was. And I think I still see that to this day. And I know that when I go to fast food here in Washington State, where we have the highest minimum wage in the country, fast food is way more expensive than it was in Texas, where they have just the federal minimum wage.
What's minimum wage there?
It is $8.67 now, but they just announced that effective. It's supposed to change. There's a state law that says it changes every year to increase with consumer price index. So the state board of whatever, our Politburo basically, has announced that it will now be $9.03, I think, starting the beginning of next year.
Quickly explain why we're against a minimum wage. And that's the thing that pisses a lot of people off. People think, oh, you hate poor people. But explain why eliminating the minimum wage would help poor people and help everyone.
Well, first, I'll attack it from the moral standpoint. Basically, morally, you're saying it is illegal to contract with somebody to work for less than that price. So you shut out anybody who wanted to work for less. And there are situations like that where a worker might not be worth that much to a company. It's basically
like a new worker or a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a teenager with a summer job.
Exactly.
They're not worth $9 an hour.
And so studies have shown that minimum wage increases actually can lead to more unemployment because employers can't afford people to do those certain jobs at that price. It's price fixing in essence. And a lot of people can wrap their head around the idea that price fixing is a bad thing when it comes to food costs or, you know, anything. Labor for a businessman is a cost. It is the same thing as buying a car or a sign or a box of pepperoni. It's the same thing. And when you fix that, you change the way he does business.
And people go around it by paying undocumented workers less anyway. You know, if you're against them foreigners taking your job before getting rid of the minimum wage.
Not only that, but I've noticed this personally on my personal level when I worked for minimum wage, that it doesn't help poor people. When the minimum wage increases, like I said, the price of everything else that is dependent on minimum wage labor goes up because those businessmen have business models where they have tracked everything to work out the way it did with that old price. Now the price changes. So in order for them to keep paying everybody else the same, in order for them to keep getting their same amount of money on their investment, they have to raise prices somewhere. So when I worked at Domino's and we had the minimum wage increase, we added a delivery charge. So we made the price of ordering a pizza go up. And not only that, because I got a lot of tips as a large portion of my money, when people saw that delivery charge, they tipped me less. So I got paid less when the minimum wage was installed, and I had to pay more for things that I bought, like food. So it did not help me at all as a minimum wage worker to have my minimum wage increased at all. It made things worse. I actually ended up getting paid less and having to pay more for things.
Word.
Word.
Worms. I want to mention that we have a link on the site. It's the Wikipedia page of the list of California public officials who've been charged with crimes.
Nice.
There's a lot of them. So recently we were talking about the tyranny of the post office, and you told a story about, we both told stories about our wives having problems with them. One was DJ was sending something to LA. The company moved across the hall, but the post office wouldn't deliver it and brought it back. And you want to recap Jessica's thing real quick?
Yeah, she mailed a box to her mom for her birthday. Her mom never got it. So when she tried to call, she was told the only way she could find out what happened to it was to have her mom go to that post office in her town and see if she could find it. And so she was basically screwed, and out of the $15 postage it cost her to try to get that box there. And her thing was, you know, what if her mom was an invalid? You know, you pay for this service to get the thing right to their door, and then they come back and say, well, no, in order to get this box, you need to go to the actual post office and wait in line.
What if her mom was an invalid and a diabetic, and that was insulin? You know, some company shipping insulin or something.
And the other thing is the post office is open business hours, and her mom works a regular 9-to-5 in a different part of town, half an hour away from where her post office is going to be. She can't go there on a lunch break. She has have to take a day off of work to try to get this box that Jessica sent her.
That's the public sector. I want to talk about dealing with the private sector. I recently had an experience with UPS that was much smoother and nicer and would never happen with the post office. It was when I sent our movie in on a tiny little hard drive. I mean, the thing was like the size of a pack of cigarettes and weighed nothing. When I sent the movie in to MVD for them to do the digital delivery from and to do the DVD from, and it included, you know, the Quark and PDF files for the cover and the disc art and the bio, you know, everything they needed to make it, to make thousands of copies. They gave me their UPS number and I sent it on their UPS number, but I knew I'd be charged back for it by MVD.
Yeah.
So MVD sends me this auto-generated printout from UPS. It was like $95. And I was like, what? Because it was sent second day, and I had recently sent a box of stuff for Kofi to someone in Denver who was going to be taking it to Africa for him. I mean, that box was big and weighed like 50 pounds, and it cost half that. You know, it cost $45. It didn't cost $90. And I'm like, something's wrong. I mean, it is a few zones further, Pennsylvania, where MVD is, but it can't be that much more. I send UPS stuff all the time. And I looked it up online, and they charged me. The thing had weighed 12 ounces, but they charged me 12 pounds.
Yikes.
And I called up UPS. You know, I spent about 20 minutes on the phone going from one department to another. But I finally got a hold of them. I gave them the information. They took me at my word. And they said, you'll be issued a refund.
Nice.
And the next week in MVD's next bill, they were refunded back $55 and MVD refunded it back to me.
And how did the people on the phone talk to you? Did they act like you were imposing on them or causing more work for them?
Not at all.
Exactly. Yep. They treated you like a customer because you're the one paying them.
Because there's competition, you know. If you don't like UPS, you can go to DHL or FedEx. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. They don't have a monopoly. Lefties always say we need a government because we need to prevent monopolies from happening, but a government is a monopoly.
That's a key point. That's not many people.
It's like trying to fix a headache with a guillotine.
So speaking of that, we want to talk about the droning of Americans recently that also gets back to the fact that Reagan basically created Al-Qaeda, which is pretty bizarre because right now there's all these Republicans running on I am the new Reagan. And I'm like, really? You want to be the guy who started Al-Qaeda and basically amped up the war on drugs and bombed a bunch of brown people for no reason and gave monopolies to corporations?
I think they do for some reason. And that's the other thing is a lot of times Americans take politicians more on what they say than what they do. And I think a lot of that is because of the media. The media more reports on what politicians say than what they're actually doing.
Well, Reagan talked a good talk. All politicians do. We love his thing about the scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help
right.
you.
If all you did was listen to Reagan, then yeah, I could see thinking Reagan was some kind of libertarian hero. But if you actually look...
Well, I doubt it because he also said that I have proof that smoking one marijuana cigarette does more brain damage than if you were at ground zero on the Bikini Atoll when the bomb went off.
Did he actually say that?
Yeah, that was a new one I found last night. But his anti-big government stuff is almost anarchist,
right.
But he didn't walk his talk. And, you know, Obama ran on this thing of this will be the most transparent administration ever. And there's an internal document that we know exists that they won't let out in the administration, between the administration and the military, of why they believe they are in the right droning Americans without a trial.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, but we're supposed to just take them at their word that these two American citizens had an operational role in whatever these terrorist attacks were. I think it was the underwear bombing or some failed Christmas bombing attempt. But they won't produce evidence. I mean, how is that transparent? First of all, American citizens are supposed to constitutionally be entitled to some type of due process if they're ever to be deprived of life, liberty, or property. That didn't happen here. If the government does say they have, because they say they have proof of this, produce the proof. How hard is it to do that? Why can't you do that? And they've had ample opportunity. Alaki's dad actually tried to sue the government with the ACLU on this when they first disclosed that he was on this secret list of people to be killed because he was an American citizen. And the government had an opportunity there to produce the evidence to say, well, this is why he's on the list, because he has an operational role in this, or he contributed in this way to killing Americans. But they couldn't do that. They didn't do that. And they didn't think it was necessary to do that. According to them, all they need to kill an American citizen now is for them to say that they need to do it. And then we're supposed to just say, okay, sure.
Parts of the American government have always killed American citizens. I mean, the CIA out and out admits that they've killed people and caused people their death. And, you know, Americans, like, given them LSD without their knowledge and they jump out a window. But this is the first time that a drone has been used, for one thing. And it's meaningful to us for a lot of reasons. One, because we joke constantly, don't drone me, bro. You know, we joke that we're going to get droned for making the Guns and Weed movie and we're going to get droned for doing this podcast. I don't think we are, but...
Well, all that's ever been proven against these guys is them exercising their right to free speech. Alaki was a preacher, and in his sermons, he explained that the American government was attacking people in the Middle East, and people in the Middle East have the right to defend themselves against that. That's all he was doing.
There's a Supreme Court ruling that says there are limits on free speech and basically inciting violence breaks.
No, it doesn't. Well, the Supreme Court said if you can incite violence as long as it's not specific, as long as you're not telling somebody, okay, you specifically, John Q. Public, go out and kill this person and do it this way. That's not what Alaki was doing. The Supreme Court has upheld that it's okay to say, well, I believe violence should be used in this situation. That is okay because you're just explaining your opinion on when violence should be used.
I don't want to get into defending
I'm not defending him. What I'm defending is the fact that the Supreme Court has upheld that this type of speech that Alaki was doing was protected. I don't think Alaki was a good guy, but I do think that if the government had cause to kill him, they should have produced the evidence, should have went to trial, there should have been an indictment.
If they knew where he was, why didn't they send us in a SEAL team and bring him in?
Right, you know? Exactly. And I know me and you don't advocate violence, but we do explain that the government, the U.S. government, is violent and is violence, and basically all we do is produce a media product. These two guys, the only thing out in the open...
They produced a media product.
Yeah. All that they did out in the open was Alaki produced sermons, and the other guy made an online magazine called Inspire, which both of the things did explain violence, but at the same time, I think that their speech was still protected under the First Amendment.
And, you know, another of the alleged reasons that were given for droning Alaki was that he had allegedly had email contact or contact with three of the 9/11 bombers. But presidents have contact with people like that. I mean, there's a famous picture of Reagan shaking hands with Gaddafi. There's a picture of Reagan in his office with the proto members of Al-Qaeda.
Right, exactly. And Reagan saying that these guys were the Afghani equivalent of the American founding fathers.
Yeah, Reagan said that. And there's actually a bit of unusual transparency. I'm going to link this video of Hillary Clinton basically admitting that America created Al-Qaeda by arming the Muj in Afghanistan to fight the Soviets. And, you know, that basically gets back to this thing. It's called the mongoose problem. Do you know what the mongoose problem is?
Right, there's a snake problem, so you bring in mongooses, and then you have a mongoose problem, so then you have to bring in whatever kills mongooses and ad infinitum.
And that's a definite explanation of what happened here. I mean, Reagan and the CIA helped create the problem in the Middle East. I mean, there have always been problems in the Middle East, going back to Abraham had two sons. But it hasn't been pointed at America. For a long time, the Middle East was considered, you know, this kind of quaint little, oh, those sandal-wearing people who give us the stuff we put in our cars and make nice rugs. But I think that the mongoose analogy definitely fits for a lot of government things. I mean, it fits for cops, you know. And it fits for the war on terror, creating the war on terror, going over there and creating people who will fight back. And it's just a big mess, you know, and it's like I'm more afraid of the government than I am of those people over there.
Yeah, and we've said this a thousand times before. The government has literally taken away my freedoms all the time. There are so many freedoms I can't exercise. I can't exercise my freedom of ingestion. I can't exercise my freedom of commerce, my freedom of contract. There are so many things, so many freedoms I should have that are natural rights that I'm prevented from exercising because of people in Washington, D.C. writing laws and because of people in whatever state or town I'm living in writing laws. Those are the people that take away my freedoms on a daily basis. And yet we have all these people saying that they need to drone people in the Middle East to protect my freedoms.
And the thing about the drone and why that's important, the American military, all militaries kill people all the time, and not much of it makes people safer. You know, when someone says, our boys are over there fighting for our freedom, in my lifetime, most military actions by the United States have not made Americans safer. They made them less safe. And they've killed a lot of American boys, and they've killed a lot of brown and yellow people in other countries, and they've made a lot of money for a lot of already fabulously wealthy old white guys.
Well, I ask people, give me one example of when somebody in the Middle East has taken away my freedom. Give me one example. I can't think of one example when somebody in the Middle East has taken away
think
my freedom.
Think bomb in the World Trade Center, if that happened the way they say it
yeah,
did.
That took away those people's freedoms to live. Definitely. But that didn't take away the average American's freedom.
Well, they'd have you believe it did. But the reason this droning is important is because governments, not just our government, but governments always, when they roll out the new illegal, immoral action, they always try it on the worst case scenario. For instance, they can now keep sex offenders in prison after they've paid their debt to society, as they put it. You know, if a child molester is sentenced to 15 years in prison, he serves all 15 of those years in prison, they can now put him in a state mental hospital and keep him there indefinitely incarcerated if they have two or three shrinks say this guy is still
a
threat.
Right.
And
that's something that your average soccer mom will think, yeah, that's a good thing. But then they've set the precedent for keeping people in jail or keeping people incarcerated longer.
And next time they'll do it on the repeat offender drunk driver. And then after that, they'll do it on the guy who sits in his house smoking weed.
And then it just becomes arbitrary that they can just do it for anybody. The precedent's already there.
Yeah, and now that they can drone an American citizen with no due process, it could get to the point with the slippery slope, the camel's nose under the tent. What's the other analogy we have for that?
I think those two are sufficient. Basically, they've droned an American citizen without due process, and now they can do that. And yeah, this was a bad guy. This is a guy that you're not really going to feel a lot of sympathy for. But they've set that precedent. They've done it to where the president can basically kill anybody he wants to at any time with a robotic drone in the sky. It's done. It's out there.
Yeah. And, you know, how far is it before they can do that for doing a podcast?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. On a cheerier note, I want to talk about something that's not governmental at all. It's people poking people and not respecting boundaries. And I'm not going to use any names here, and I'm not going to – this isn't really me venting. This is me trying to talk about the solution more. Basically, I had three incidences of people pushing my buttons in a 24-hour period, and it started on my anniversary, and all three of these people knew it was my anniversary. The first one was like somebody who I sometimes do free proofreading for, someone I like and help, and they're a freedom guy. And these were all freedom people, too. You know, I help him proofread stuff. He wished me a happy anniversary, and then like 3 hours later sent me this document. It's only one page, but he's like, I need you to proofread this, and I need it by tomorrow. And I'm like, really? And that's the way I work if someone's paying me.
Yeah.
And even then, I'd probably, if it was my anniversary, I'd probably say, you know, I was sitting there hanging out with my wife, and I just got up and checked my email. Probably shouldn't have, but, you know, you don't take advantage of somebody's goodness by taking a mile. You don't demand that they do free work for you now.
Right.
I do that kind of stuff for a very few people, and I do it as well as if I'm getting paid, and I usually do it within a day, but you don't tell someone to do that for free. So the second thing that happened was, a fan got really pushy with me and sent me some links to some Bilderberg stuff and some New World Order stuff and said, you guys need to talk about this all the time on your podcast. It's a much bigger issue than everything else you talk about, and you need to talk about it more. And I looked at it, and it was like this kind of weird, like, you know, 12 Jews run the world and there's a Jewish conspiracy. Uh-huh. And I'm kind of like, okay, first of all, I don't touch that with a 10-foot pole, you know. I don't go after any one group. Secondly, as far as New World Order stuff, there are so many people devoting so much time to it, it'd be redundant for us to do it.
Yeah, and we're not the ones who do it the best. Why would you tell us to read these links that you're giving us and then report on it? If you already know it, do your own podcast or listen to Alex Jones.
I sent him the link of how to do a podcast, and he's like, oh, I don't want to do that because these people will come after me.
He wants them to come after us.
Yeah. But then even so, he kept pushing into me for like an hour, like sending me really long explanations he wrote and links, and you've got to do something about this. And it's like, come on, man, this is voluntary. You're pushing me into the realm of not voluntary by being this insistent. And it's like, I've known about the Bilderbergs and New World Order stuff for decades, but, you know, I'm honestly more worried about my city council.
You can actually affect change or try to in a smaller
scale. Yeah, my city council, what if my city council made it illegal to do a free speech podcast? They could do that. I'd keep doing it, but they could come take my house. Whereas the strange underworld of people who are so rich and run the world, who are so rich that allegedly they make Bill Gates look like a pauper, and that's what this guy was saying exists. I don't feel them. I mean, I guess I feel them in like devaluing the currency, but I don't really know that Obama and Bush are lizard people. I just think they're power mad sociopaths.
Well, like we've said before, it's not about getting the right people in there. It's not about kicking the lizard people out and letting the real Americans run the government. It's about getting rid of this government power structure that allows anybody, be it lizard person or regular Joe dog catcher, to exercise such a monopoly of force and such a violent, powerful institution against the average person. Get rid of the institution. Don't worry about who's trying to control it. If you get rid of it, then these people won't have a weapon or a tool to control us.
Word. So the third person that poked me in 24 hours was was a guy who I get along with. He likes our stuff. He likes our movie. And he was in a thread with me and two guys I know in person. Like one, you know, I have like five friends in the world. You're one of them. My wife's one of them. And one of the guys in this thread was one of them. I used to be in a band with him. I used to live with him. And the other person was Paul Bonneau, who's a great guy. And it was like three people that know each other talking, and this other guy got in the conversation and was complaining to me off board, like, you're not paying enough attention to my posts, and kind of got into this weird, like, you know, I thought we were friends. And it's like, you know, I really don't have a lot of true friends. And there are people that I will talk with for hours because we share similar ideas and they're interesting people, but it doesn't make us friends, you know? And it's a boundary thing. And I put it up and he just stopped writing me. And I think he's mad at me, but it's like, you got to respect boundaries. And that's why I want to give a shout out for my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience. And I told you I was going to talk about this and you kind of joked like it was a cheesy lead up to an ad, but you know, it is a really useful book and it's a libertarian self-help book. It's, you can download it free if you want, or you can go buy, I wish you'd go buy the paperback on Amazon. The website is lifeamp.org, lifeamp.org. And you can go buy it.
Well, it is a good book and it's helped people. And it's a good way of personalizing this type of philosophy and bringing people into the fold.
Have you read it or are you reviewing?
I'm reviewing a book I haven't read, but I've seen people give you praise for it. And I've seen that it has actually helped people in their lives and brought people who maybe not in the libertarian fold. It's brought them into thinking of these ideas because they see that these strategies help them and that they come from a place of liberty.
So real quick, I want to end with talking about labels, because that same week, two people said I use labels too much, because I called myself, what was it, a voluntarist, anarchist, opt-in,
panarchist.
Something, polyamorous, no, panarchist, and two people were like, labels are limiting, you use labels too much, Michael, and I was thinking about it, and it's like, I don't think they're limiting, especially when you put them on yourself, and for me, there's a value to taxonomy, to classifying things, to sort them. It kind of keeps everything from happening at the same time in my brain. I kind of see my brain as a field of Venn diagrams. You know what a Venn diagram is?
Yeah, like the two circles or three circles, and they overlap in certain positions.
Yeah, and where they intersect and don't. And, you know, one of the big Venn diagrams for me is like true friends, and internet acquaintances. And it's just a way of dealing with information. And then I was reading about that and kind of fell down a wormhole of 3- and 4- and 5- dimensional Venn diagrams, which gets into tesseracts and a whole bunch of interesting stuff, which I'll link.
Well, labels and words, geeks. And they're, to me, are just like tools. They're like guns or anything else. They can be used for good or for evil. And I think there's a lot of use to labels. Like you said, it's important to know, you know, what philosophy somebody's coming from if you're going to be reading their work. I think that they can be misused, especially by governments. I think that governments tend to try to divide us into groups so they can conquer us. And so that, you know, you worry about which voting block you're going to get. Are you going to get the Hispanic vote, the black vote, and doling out different favors to people?
Yeah, because governments apply guns and money to labels.
Exactly.
You know, giving money taken from someone else at gunpoint to this labeled group of people and preventing this group of labeled people from doing this kind of commerce or whatever.
But again, the problem there is the government force. It's not the label itself. It's the way that they're using the label to dole out goods in different respects and for different favors.
And it's not just the government. You know, anytime that aggression is attached to anything, it's bad.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Word. So you got anything else there, Nima Vedati?
No, I think that was a good cast. I can't think of a positive note necessarily to end this on, but
I can. Go read my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Okay. There we go.
Word.
Peace.
Said that just will control you, 100% natural. You will jump for the master race and always wear the happiness. It knows your eyes can't happen here. A big bird on white horse is dear. The hippies won't come back, you say. Mellow out or you will pay. Mellow out or you will pay. California over Alice. California police.
Say hi. Say hi, Peanut. Peanut.
Hello, Freedom Beans. It's your boy, Dean. From the U.S., get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.